a scream. Andy Moan, my woe. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Jack Chartier. Her show Sun Tests is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery through June 27th, 2020. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Jack.
Thanks for having me.
I should point out at this point, we're doing this by Zoom. You're in Seattle in your studio, but you've been a presence in the Portland art scene for a while because your work is often on a Elizabeth Leach Gallery. So just tell us a little bit, what does your painting look like? If people wandered in off the street, what would they see first?
Well, normally they would see paintings, but for this show, these are prints on metal using a process called dye sublimation, which is kind of like a high-end inkjet where the image is infused right into the metal surface. They're archival, and from a distance, they look just like my paintings, but when you get up close, you realize it's a different surface. Mm-hmm. They're very matte, the color's really rich, and they're in groupings, usually of two or four, depending on which piece it is. And it's very colorful, and they're bigger than you would normally see my work, which is one of the things about the dye sublimation that I like, is I can go a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm. So if people walked in, what they see really is a bunch of like oval dots, which are kind of like the shape you color in when you're voting, you know, or you're taking a test. And then out from that has...
Oh, you mean the shape of the... You mean the shape of the actual marks of the colors?
Yeah. So these are like, whether it's your painting or these prints, it's dots where the color has bled out from the middle and sort of stretches off maybe in one direction. And the colors are really, really vibrant. I mean, you've got these oranges and fuchsias and turquoise. And often the dots, they're lined up in rows, right, in columns. So
right. It's
kind of scientific-y, but the color is sort of very anarchic. It's taken off in its own direction. So tell us a bit about why do you choose that shape and that kind of arrangement?
Well, before I started the whole testing series, which was, quite a long time ago, I was working with, I come out of an abstract expressionist background, but I started really stripping things down into these very minimal paintings that were working with very, what I call archetypal kind of shapes that looked like they might have grown in a petri dish or grown, just sort of basic circles and ovals and lines, but kind of organic. And when I started the testing series, I was looking at a lot of images from science, like dye, DNA electrophoresis, which is like, I saw it on the O.J. Simpson trial. It was kind of the first time I saw it. And I liked the shapes because they had this sort of abstract, minimal quality to them, but they're also in grids, which is what I was interested in. I was looking at a lot of, like Agnes Martin, where there's lots of minimal grids of work. So with the testing series, I'm using that format of the grid and really stripping down the shapes to some really simple rudimentary shapes because I'm trying to focus more on what's happening with the materials and not so much about drawing something that you would recognize. And so mm-hmm. It keeps it really open to keep the shapes really simple.
Mm-hmm. So you've been doing a series of paintings, right? The testing paintings is a series.
Right.
And what was it about what was it you're trying to capture by doing print versions? I know one idea was to make them bigger.
Well, for the paintings, I'm using a lot of materials that are not typical art supply materials. And so there was a question of, are they archival? Are they gonna hold up over time?
Mm-hmm.
And so I do a lot of testing in my studio in the window I'll as a simple example, I'll brush out a color, and then I'll tear half of the paper apart and put it in the dark and the other half in the window and just see if it changes over time. Mm-hmm. And anything that was changing, I would weed out and put it in my box of do not use colors, you know, because they would change too fast. But I really liked that process of seeing things changing in my window. It was sort of like in the background of what's happening in my studio that people don't normally get to see.
Yeah.
And it's been in the back of my mind for a long time to do these sun test paintings. In fact, I have done at least one show of them before, but they're really hard to show because all you're seeing is the last painting. You're seeing how it looks after it's changed over time. You don't get to see all the steps along the way. And so for this body of work, I'm documenting the changes from paintings that are in the window and then scanning them at really high resolution. So you get to see as a viewer all the steps along the way as the painting was changing, frozen in time. It's sort of like a time-lapse movie, but you're taking a couple of still frames from that movie and just looking at them and comparing them.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me a lot more room to play around with things and sort of share that normally only I'm getting to see. And it's mostly even for me, just in my memory. I don't have a way of looking at them. This kind of stretches that out and lets you look at them.
So as you come into the Elizabeth Leach Gallery and stand in the middle of the room, turn, face the left side, there's a group of three, and they're the one on the right is more faded than the other two. You know, they fade as you go to the right. What's that series called?
I think that's Sun Test number 8.
So each one has, I think, three rows of color dots. And right. Then by the third print, it's so faded that really you've just got gray and a little bit of orange, and then there's a lot of pencil marking where you've made notes. So this is like the most extreme example of the fading. And is that because of the materials or the length of time or what?
I purposely used colors in that one that I knew would completely disappear over time. Many of the painting, the prints in the show are a combination of colors that change and some that stay permanent. But for number 8, I really wanted to make that piece completely disappear. And in fact, I still have that painting in my window right now. I'm trying to get rid of that last bit of orange, which is taking forever. But, you know, and a lot of these paintings stay in my window for at least a year.
I keep
scanning.
What's this window you're talking about?
Oh, I have a bunch of windows in my studio.
Yeah.
And so I make the paintings. They're fairly small. They have to be able to fit on my scanner. I've got, you know, a 11 by 14 size scanner bed. So the paintings have to fit on that bed to be able to be scanned. And so they're small. Mm-hmm. And I just keep them in the window. And every once in a while, like in the beginning, I scan them every day. But as the tenacious colors are left behind and the fugitive colors are gone, I just keep at it and scan them once a month, once every mm-hmm. few months. Just to keep, so the series keeps growing, that very last still frame mm-hmm. keeps, that leading edge keeps moving forward as I add one more until the painting has changed as much as I think I can get it to change. So Sun Test number 8 was one that I wanted to change quickly and completely disappear. And so you can see it's almost gone by the, mm-hmm. the last frame.
How many weeks was this? Do you remember?
I can't remember what day that one is. It's probably 52, maybe. I'm going by memory. That would have been the 52nd day. Yeah.
Right. What are these art materials that are so fugitive? Are these
I work with lots of inks and dyes and stains from different walks of life, like furniture stains, silk dyes. Some of them are dyes that are used in a bio lab when you're dyeing a protein on a slide and you want to stain it so the protein will show up, and those are super fugitive colors, some of those.
Where do you get them?
I get dyes and stains from anywhere I can find them, and so that's why I'm always testing them to see if they're going to be light fast or not, and then I kind of weed them out into two different camps, light fast or fugitive. This particular body of work, I'm really playing around a lot more with the fugitive colors, which is just so much fun for me because I can mix, for example, I can mix a blue and a yellow and make a green. And normally in paint, you make a green and that's it, it's done. But with inks and dyes, you might get a halo of yellow with a blue that has a sharp edge, and it's a completely different thing. And then if the blue disappears, over time, it'll turn, you know, blue disappears and suddenly you don't have green at all, you have just yellow. I can play around with that sort of on-off effect of all the different colors. And it's, you know, it's a level of like what I call obsessive minutia that artists understand, because we do it. Each of us finds our area where we kind of just zero in, and you can play forever with it. And so that part of it, that process part, is maybe not always as interesting to the public, but with the sun tests, I feel like it gives people a chance to see a little more of what's going on in the studio in the background, which is just kind of fun.
So to capture the process, you scan these works like every day, and then you selected a few that sort of indicated the best progress. And then tell us how they got made into sheets of aluminum hanging on the wall.
Yeah, well, so when they're still in the paint, like the painting itself, I'll mask out sections of the painting with strips of cardboard. And so you'll see these columns start to emerge over time as the background around it starts to fade out, but the part that I've masked is still kept intact, so you can see the color shifting.
Oh yeah, why do you do that?
Because I just want to see more drama. It's like, okay, if the whole painting is exposed to light, it'll fade out kind of all at once, but if I mask areas, then it slows it down for some of those areas and creates more, you know, I'm still a painter at heart. It's also telling it another way of just that change over time.
Yeah.
So then after I've scanned them, like you were asking about that whole process, there's a lot of time spent in Photoshop trying to get the colors to match the real thing. I have a lot of rules for myself. So the testing rules are all about it being real and not gratuitously just changing a color because it looks cool. But it has to be the real thing. And so I try to get the colors to be exactly like the real painting. So there's a lot of photoshopping mm-hmm. out little bits of hair and lint that it's like always there. And when you blow it up big, you see it. So.
Oh yeah, because it's been in the window?
And just things get trapped in the acrylic medium when I make the painting itself that are tiny that you don't see, but when you blow it up suddenly, it's distracting. Mm-hmm. And so I'll take those out. And then it goes to the printer, which I work with a printer in the Denver area, who's a fine art photography printer. It's a company that does really high-end fine art photography printing, but they also do this work on metal. And they have this process that's kind of fascinating. I haven't seen it in person, but they basically do a very high-end inkjet print on this particular type of material. And they sandwich it onto this special metal that's been treated. It's like one place in the world you can get it. And then they put it in a heat press, which presses the image in and also infuses it in, so it's locked into that surface. And it's really archival inks. You can get the thing wet and it doesn't come off. It's like really impervious. And so I don't have to mat them or frame them and put them behind glass and all that. I can hang them on the wall like a painting. Mm-hmm. And that's the part about it that it appealed to me. Until I found out this process, I really wasn't interested in making prints on paper. For me, I didn't want them to be behind glass and be fragile. It's like too fussy for me. I mm-hmm. wanted it just to be on the wall, like a painting. So the metal prints allow me to get something that's as close as possible to a painting. And yet it's archival and I can go bigger than I normally could go, all of that stuff. So it's kind of interesting.
Does that printer finish it off with some kind of coating, or is the final press, you know, is that the final surface?
I think they do have a final coating, because like you can choose matte, gloss, or satin, and I always choose the matte, and that seals the surface up and gives it the sheen that I want. And then once that's on there, it's like finished.
Right. And then they ship these from where did you say it was?
It's a printer I use in the Denver area, so they can ship them wherever. So like for this show, I didn't actually get to come down and see the show because it was right when everybody was being told to stay home. And so the gallery got them and installed them, and I've seen photos of them, but I haven't seen the actual prints, which is kind of weird for me. Normally I see the work and live with it in my studio for months before a show, and I have a sense of how it feels to me to see it in person, and these I haven't actually seen. So it's kind of a strange feeling.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus My guest this week is Jack Chartier. She's a painter based in Seattle, and her show Sun Tests is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery through June 27th. So, Jack, you also blew these, in the process of printing, you blew them up. And I understand it's because you might do a dot, and then the interesting part is only, you know, an eighth of an inch wide. It's a new kind of sort of shape that emerges around the edge. So by blowing them up, you get a lot more of these beautiful colors that emerge. Is that correct?
Yeah, you kind of, like, I'm looking at the paintings up close, like almost like under a magnifying glass. And, you know, when you see a painting in the gallery, most people aren't going to be looking at it that close. So this is a way of kind of sharing how I see them, like by blowing them up really big. It's like looking at something under a microscope where you see it and the nuances are more amplified. You know, I've seen my work when I've done slide talks where I've seen it on a big screen where it's blown up really large, and I have thought, wow, I wish I could make them look that big, or make a shape when it, like the way that the halo bleeds out. If I make a circle that's 3 inches big, the halo is gonna still only bleed out a little bit, like that eighth inch you were talking about. But when I blow them up, you get the halo can be inches wide, and it just amplifies everything. Mm-hmm. So again, it's like another way of looking at something and giving it more attention by making it big.
Do you, when you make the paintings though, you use gesso and you know, a varnish, right? And things bleed through into this varnish. So, and this is on wood panel. So that's a
there's a coating in the varnish is like the last coat, which is just to seal it up. But there's an acrylic layer that's sort of like Elmer's glue. It's white when it's wet and it dries clear. Mm-hmm. So anybody who's familiar with how glue can dry like that, and when it's wet, it's water-based and it activates all the color and it pulls the color up, and then there's all this interaction that happens mm-hmm. between the color. I use a lot of spray paint, bury the colors under spray paint, and then pull them back up through. If you've ever had a water stain on, say, a door in your basement where you had your basement flood, and you've got this water stain, and then you want to paint over it, and that stain wants to keep bleeding back up through the mm-hmm. paint. So you might have to use a stain killer to kind of kill that stain. I'm using that process. It's like an on-off process of killing a stain or letting the stain come up. But in my case, I'm using lots of other colors that stain and bleed besides just the one rusty color stain that might be in your basement.
Mm-hmm. What are these dyes? Can you say a bit more about the materials that you're using? If you're using like rattle can spray paint.
Oh, the spray paints, yeah. I've got about probably 80 different white spray paints of different mm-hmm. types of whites.
Okay.
But I kind of focus on white because it's one of my studio rules, is the color of the inks and dyes are kind of what the focus is and not the spray paint. So I don't want to introduce extra variables, if you will, from a science point of view. So I'm using just white, but they're all different whites. I mean, there's a big range. And some of them will block quite a bit of the color, and some of them won't. Some of them will block certain colors, but not other colors. And there's a lot of variables in there to play with. So,
but that's a chemical reaction. Whether a color shows through the white or not is a chemical reaction.
Yeah, it has to do with the contents of each spray paint. They're all made with different formulas, and how the colors interact with that, and how heavy the spray paint's on there. There's lots of stuff to play with for me of variables. And in fact, as soon as I start to know something too much, I'm always looking for something new to throw a monkey wrench in there so I don't know exactly what's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. I like that idea of having a certain amount unknown and experimental and sort of chaos and in amongst everything that's happening. Like, I don't know what the sunlight's gonna do. So that's the variable I'm playing with this work. It's like, how much light, which colors are gonna change. Anybody who's ever done ceramic has probably played around with making glazes where you don't know what the color's really gonna look like until it's been fired, because it changes in the kiln. And the colors that I'm working with are similar to that in the sense that I don't know what they're gonna do once the sun hits them. And then maybe two different colors are mixed together and one changes and one doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that stuff of not knowing what's gonna happen is where I get all my interest in the in making the work. It's like keeps me inspired and interested.
And what's so you leave the notes, you know, the notes are part of the painting. These are handwritten pencil notes. They say things like sun test purple 2BE or, you know, super red or test fugitive red A and then a date.
Yeah, that's so that I know which color I used. So if something happens, I can pin it back to the particular color.
Yeah.
And like sometimes it might say like pink with an arrow red, pink arrow green. So that means I'm trying to make a color that's going to start off pink and turn green.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little formula. I have all these little dropper bottles, like eyedropper bottles with ink in them. And I work with an eyedropper. And so I label the bottles like this is a little test of a color that's going to start off pink and turn green.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I look at the painting, it might not actually do that at all. So then I have to change the name of the color. So there's like work in progress. All these color formulas are just works in progress.
Mm-hmm.
All the notes are for me so that I can go back and figure out what's happening. They're real notes. They're not there just because they look cool. They're there because I'm actually using them to learn something.
Yeah.
And study.
It makes those pieces look like pages in a scientific notebook, you know, you've got where scientists will drop things on a page and then do pencil notes. But then you have this series along the kind of wall that's kind of behind you as you're walking into the gallery, and it's a series of five circles. The palette seems to be blue, kind of turquoise, light blue, some dark gray. And the center one, these are like, they look like big colored record albums, you know.
Yeah.
LPs, five of them just mounted on the wall. And the center one is the darkest and the two outside ones are the most faded. And then there's a pattern, which is a curve. It's like parallel curves. It looks like the Spotify logo actually upside down. What's going on there? Because they're more artsy, right? There's no writing on them. They're recognizable shapes.
That's an extreme detail of a painting, a different painting that's not in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So if you zoom in on just one little area with just a couple shapes, mm-hmm. and zoom in on it really tight and then blow it up big, that's kind of what I did there.
Yeah.
So the one in the center is day one before it had been exposed to any sunlight, and the outside ones are the most time has gone by.
Mm-hmm.
And that shape that you're talking about, that kind of comes from the DNA electrophoresis shape that some people call it a bean shape. It's sort of like a curve, like a U a little bit, which is a kind of a shape that comes up a lot in DNA electrophoresis images.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of like that shape because it feels like it's moving, like it's getting pulled down.
Yeah.
Up to the bottom.
But you zoomed in using the scanner and the computer, right?
Yeah. Yep. Well, I scanned the whole painting.
Yeah.
But then in Photoshop, I zoomed in really tight on this one particular area to make a second piece from it. So it's called Sentis number 7. There's a whole group of those that are the full piece, the full painting. This is a special one, which is just that little group of three shapes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to see what a round piece would look like. I just thought it would be fun.
Did you save the file as it's a round image, or did the printer just sort of crop it to a circle?
I save it as a round image, and then the printer, they cut it out, that shape.
Mm-hmm. So
and then they print right on it.
Yeah. What's the last software you use before they, when you send them the file, what is it saved as?
A TIFF file, really high resolution TIFF from Photoshop. And they do all the conversion. They convert it from RGB, which is red, green, and blue, which is what you see on the screen. They convert that into CMYK, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how they print it. So there's some changeover that happens with the color when they print.
Do they send you samples before they do the big print?
Yeah, especially when it's a new piece, we'll do some back and forth proofing, color proofing, just like in other types of printmaking. Like printers will do, like if you're doing a lithography, you might do some proofs first to see if it's working the way you want, make adjustments. Or photographers sometimes will do proofs, and then they call them artist proofs. So we do some of that back and forth. usually they're small little sample tests. And then once we're ready to go, they print the final ones.
Yeah. So this whole test series, I mean, what is this an offshoot of what you're really driven to do, or is this going to become a whole thing you continue to pursue?
I think this is going to be right now I still do the paintings, and now this body of work I think is really taking root and going to be a parallel body of work. I'll probably work on them at the same time. And it's still under the whole heading of testing for me. It's all about just playing around with the materials and seeing what they'll do. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a loose scientific process, not really scientific, but mostly I'm a painter and I'm interested in sort of minimal abstraction. I'm interested in images that have a resonance to them, kind of like if you remember those, Robert Irwin made these big discs that were paintings, but they'd be on the wall and they'd reflect mm-hmm. light in interesting ways. They're very minimal, almost impossible to photograph. But they have this resonance when you stand in front of them. It's like ringing a bell in your eyes, you know. And I'm trying to get that kind of resonance in these paintings. Mm-hmm. That's always what I'm interested in, is that sort of simple, clear sense that it's hitting you in a way that's sort of a meditative state you can't really explain. And then all the rest of the testing and the notes and all that is sort of in the background. But mostly what I want the viewer to get is just this all at once hit of color and this feeling that feels kind of uplifting and beautiful and resonant.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any theories about color itself and the way it affects, you know, the human mind?
Well, I think it's sort of a lot like music. We all have our preferences and what we like to listen to. I think visual art is the same in that way. And you're trying to find something that feels the way you want to feel. Like when I'm painting in the studio, I listen to certain types of music depending on what I'm doing. But I'm trying to make paintings that feel like that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want my color to do that for people. And that's partly why making them big is inspiring to me, because you can just walk up to it and feel it sort of goes to the perimeter of what you can see depending on how close you get. Mm-hmm. And I like that. If I could show the whole series, but you know, it's a lot, and the differences between them are sometimes so minute that doesn't matter to see them all. I don't know. But I also have a group of these were animated. There's a lobby in a Merck building in South San Francisco where they did this media wall, and so the images are changing over time, and they're actually moving and growing and or disappearing. So that's kind of fun. I haven't seen that in person yet. Mm-hmm. That just went up last year. But so animating these is another thing that could be fun. Mm-hmm.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Jack Chartier. Her paintings are on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery through June 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom.
Thank you too. It was a pleasure.
This is Art Focus. My name's Joseph Gallivan. Thanks for listening today, and I want to remind everyone that if you can donate today at kbu.fm/give, please do so. We've had to cancel our usual spring membership drive, so we hope you'll show your support by giving online. We know times are tough, so if you're not able to donate, don't worry. But if you can, please show your support for this free community resource, kbu.fm. Thanks very much.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
What kind of KBOO fan are you? Are you a news and public affairs listener? Or maybe you tune in to hear our local independently produced music? Or maybe you love it all? Show your KBOO fandom by donating to KBOO.